one of my best friends. We've been friends for 50 years. I know that's hard to believe, but is death. And, you know, this is just a great ministry. We're still friends. I guess he never really hears what I say about him. But anyway, and Paul, I was going to tell Paul, because, you know, me and Johnny Walden did grow up together. You don't have to shake their hands like they're Chinese. But I'm not going to, maybe I won't behave today because Joanne's not here. So I'm gonna try to get back in line here. Are we having trouble getting the slides up? Okay. So one of the things I wanted to say about the slides, Dalton emailed me this morning, and I was like, dang, I guess I am doing the message this morning. And he said, I had to change the slides a little bit. And I thought about the first time I did this, because he had to change the slides the first time because I had put a lot of scripture in there or something. And I said, if there's a mistake or if I kind of lose my place, it's because Dakota did everything I asked him to do. And I think Dalton was like, yes. I don't know who Dakota is, but we'll blame it on him. And so however it goes today, if it goes off a little bit, then we'll blame Dakota. We won't blame me or Dalton. We'll just blame Dakota again. So today, I kind of want to talk about David versus Goliath, but only because that's just a footnote in King David's story, and only because it's really just a footnote in the book of 1 Samuel, which 1 Samuel, to me, is really a book about a people or people who decide to put their trust in God or they decide to put their trust in man. And that's been a struggle sometimes, I think, for a lot of people. I know maybe recently I've come out of that, but going through a struggle with, you know, who am I really putting my faith in? And when we put our faith in ourselves, we're putting our faith in man as well. And when we get absorbed with our own life, and we see that we're struggling for the same things that our coworkers are struggling for, or we're fighting for the same things that our friends or our coworkers who may not be Christians are struggling for, I think it's kind of a reminder of where are we within that book of 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel. And as it goes on to Kings, we see that the Israelites, as they demanded a king and they wanted to turn away from God, that as they went in even further into like the books of Kings, the terrible things that they would do, even to the point where they had gone back to sacrificing their children and stuff like that. And you know, the God that's still alive today, Molech, you know, they were sacrificing their children. And of course, Molech is not the true God, but he is the God of convenience, and he is the God that runs Planned Parenthood. And so we just have to keep in mind that if we're fighting for the same thing that other people are fighting for, maybe we're not on the right side of where we need to be when we think about the book of 1 Samuel. So I wanted to start out with this verse where, you know, basically, as I said in the past, you know, God usually gives us two choices. He usually gives us a blessing or a curse, or life or death, and it's up to us. And so in Jeremiah 17:5, where he says, cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes flesh his strength, and his heart departs from the Lord. And, you know, it says basically he's a shrub that's like in the desert, and that he's going to be in a dry land, and it's not going to prosper. But blessed is the man who turns to the Lord, whose hope is the Lord. And I think about sometimes we get caught up in the world. And I thought about a few years ago, probably about 5 or 6 years ago. You know, I would watch Fox News and I would agree with a lot of what they said. And then I would watch MSLSD and I would kind of not agree with anything they said. But nothing ever changed. You know, it was just feeding my, you know, these things, these concerns that, you know, might, you know, be part of this worldly life. And I just got to the point where I said, I'm not going to participate. And I haven't missed it at all, to be honest with you. I hardly ever watch the news. I mean, I know there's some current affairs that we need to know about and we need to be good citizens, but it was almost that latter part where it just said, you know, you're not going to, you don't have to get caught up in all this, you know, and participate in all this stuff that's going on. And then the, Psalms 34:4, where it says, I sought the Lord and he heard me and he delivered me from my fears. Because we all face battles in life, and some of them are mental. And as I get older, you know, I think about, you know, people do have real struggles mentally, you know, and then we have physical battles. Sometimes when we're young, life is unfair and people struggle, you know, physically when they're young, but other people when they get older, and you know, we've had family members and things like that have gone through great struggles, and it's just part of life. And so, you know, who is your faith in? You know, is your faith in man or is your faith in God? But I do know that God's plans are bigger than ours. And I was thinking about a guy that I worked with as a veteran employment advocate who really wanted to get a job with us, the company I worked for. And he interviewed and, you know, they told him, hey, you were a very close second, which I guess you always hear when you don't get the job. But he really wanted the job. But as he was, you know, recovering from those wounds, he actually was offered a much better job, making like $30,000 more than what he would have made with us. And I remember talking to him. I said, you know, God's plans are bigger than ours. I know how bad you wanted this job, but God had other plans for you. And then sometimes I have to pray there at the bottom, and I've kind of got away from it. I need to get back to it. You know, I just ask God, don't let me get in my own way. You know, don't let my plans keep you from doing, blessing me the way you want to bless me. And please don't let me lead myself to my own destruction, because I'm fully capable of doing that. Fully capable. You know, next slide. So, PJ, you may have to look up, because I'm going to do this. And so anybody who's ever been in the Army, when this, if you're in the field, you're on a patrol, that means, hey, gather up around me, you know, because we can't yell. It means gather up around me. But if you're in the Air Force, that means, hey, we need another round over here. So I was going to throw the Marines in here, but I don't think any Marines are here today. So David versus Goliath is part of the book of 1 Samuel. And, you know, it's a favorite Bible story because it's about a young, what we consider him a boy, and he fights a giant. But it's also a story about a hero that's always at war with his enemy. He's always at war with his own desires, which is hard to say because, you know, God says that David was a man after his own heart. But David did always place his faith in God, no matter what he was going through. That was one thing he did. And even when he realized his own mistakes, he always put his faith in God. Even when he had to pray for his son, who eventually ended up dying, David's faith was 100% in God. But it's also, you know, the modern underdog story, usually where a lesser opponent, you know, overcomes great odds, like the movie Hoosiers, or I always think of the boxing match where Mike Tyson got beat by Buster Douglas. But unlike those stories, Goliath never really had a chance. He was really the stooge from the beginning. And like, as we get more into the story, we'll understand more about it. But I honestly think even outside the spiritual realm, reading what we know about David, I think David would have killed him anyway. You know, but we also know that he was already anointed to be the king of Israel, so it was going to happen regardless. All right, so like I said, 1 Samuel is a story about a people or a nation that decides to put their faith in man or God, And we'll meet Hannah, who represents faith in God. She believes that God is going to fulfill her desire to have a son. And Samuel represents Hannah's faith in God, but also Israel's trust in God. And then if I get a little off track, Paul can fix it next week. But I really think that Saul represents Israel's faith in man, and they're turning away from God in some ways. And then, of course, David represents a full faith in God. But because of that, the battle against Goliath was really probably David's easiest battle. It really was nothing to him. It was kind of a footnote. He was actually going to do something else. He was delivering stuff for his brothers, and it just happened to present itself. And he goes, I got time. I can get this done. You know, we'll get this guy killed, and we'll move on from this. So that's not the battles that I don't think David ever worried about physical battles. I think it was always other things, you know, that he was more concerned with. Next slide, please. All right, so in Samuel 1, 9 through 11, we know that Hannah just prays to God earnestly and says, you know, God, please give me a child, but not only give me a child, give me a son. And if you give me a son, I promise that I will give him back to you. He will be yours from his birth. And Eli, who was there with her, because she was praying so earnestly, Eli's like, woman, are you drunk? You know, if you some of the story, if you read it, and she goes, I'm not a woman of the world. I am just praying earnestly to God that he's going to grant me this wish to have a son. And Eli says, I believe it's going to happen. You know, he said, you're going to have a son. And then she does. And what does she do? She does exactly what she told God in 27 and 28. She said, so I pray for this child, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I asked him. Therefore, I have lent him to the Lord as long as he lives. And basically, he is going to be God. Now, I'm gonna give you guys a hint. You guys have heard of dyslexia. I don't have dyslexia. I have multilexia. And, well, dyslexia is like you see things backwards. Multilexia is the words just go where they want. They might go to the next sentence, they might go to the next paragraph, and then they'll come back. So it's a little more difficult than dyslexia, and I know some of you will say, well, it doesn't exist, and, you know, 50 years ago they said PMS didn't exist, and if you tell a woman it doesn't exist, you're in trouble. If you tell a woman it does exist, you're in trouble, right? So I can do that. After what Rhonda said a couple weeks ago, I'm okay with where I am, right? All right, so next slide, please. All right, so I'm not even getting close to anywhere where Rhonda went a couple weeks ago. So, all right, but she did a wonderful job, didn't she? And I think she should do a study on that. I think she should do a study. That was fantastic, and it really shows who in our family got the brains. Because obviously her and Michael, you know, got the brains, and that means me and Paul got the looks. But you know, you get what you get. Samuel, as we know, Hannah prayed earnestly for a son, and Samuel represents Hannah's faith in God, but Samuel also represents Israel's trust in God, because Samuel is a righteous judge. He's faithful to God, and he is basically touched, I'm going to say, with the Holy Spirit from birth. But, you know, the Bible tells us that Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground. Now, that's a powerful statement, that if he said something, it had weight. If he said something, it had power. So, you know, I've already been up here and jested quite a bit, and none of that would have been anything. Everything Samuel said was important. Everything Samuel said was taken as something that was valid. All over Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, they knew that he had been established a prophet of the Lord. But what happens is, as we go on, we see that Israel decides that they want to be like all other nations. And they decide that they want a king. They want a physical king. Even though they have a king, God is their king, and they have these judges that if it is too much for them to handle, someone like Samuel will go to God and find the answer. But they come to him and they say, look, because Samuel wanted to retire. Samuel was getting old, and so he appointed his sons to do his job. But his sons were not like him. They were willing to take bribes. They were willing to pervert justice. And so the Israelites come to him in 1 Samuel 8 through 5, and they say, look, you're old and your sons do not walk in the way that you walk. Now make us a king to judge us like all nations. And this really displeased Samuel because he was so close to God, and he prayed about it. But then God came back and said, look, the Lord said to Samuel, heed the voice of the people and all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me. And this is not the first, well, this is not the only time that the people of Israel rejected God. As we can look in the New Testament, when they would not go into the judgment hall because they didn't want to be defiled, but they sent Jesus, the Son of God, to the judgment hall to be defiled. And they said, away with him, away with him, crucify him. And the Pilate said, what shall I do with your king? And the chief priest answered and said, we have no king but Caesar. Now that was just another example of them saying, God is our man. Our man is our God. We're going to put our trust in man. We're not going to put our trust in God. All right, so this part, I'm going to have to read a little bit. And this is when Samuel comes to them and says, this is what a king's going to cost you. You say you want a king. Let me tell you what it's going to be like when you have a king. And he says, this is the behavior of the king that will reign over you. He will take your sons and he will appoint them for his own chariots, and he will make them his horsemen, and some of them will run before his chariot. Basically, they're going to be in his military. He will appoint captains over them by the thousands, over them by the fifties, and he will set some to the plow. They're going to work for him, and they're going to reap his harvest, and they're going to make weapons for him. And he's going to take your daughters, and he's going to make them perfumers. He's going to make them cooks. He's going to make them bakers. And he's going to take the best of your fields and the best of your vineyards and your olive groves, and he's going to give them to his servants. We're introduced to government workers there, right? He's going to give them to his servants. And he will take your male servants and your female servants and the finest young men and your donkeys, and he will put them to his work. And he will take a tenth of your sheep and your servants. And you know what the Israelites did? They said, hey, maybe we need to reconsider this. But they didn't. They said, bet, that's what we want. That's exactly what we want. We're good with that, right? Next slide, please. All right, so God tells Samuel, they want a king, go get him a king. And so Samuel goes out, and the first king that he that God anoints is somebody that is physically pleasing to the Israelites. They want a king. They want somebody they can be proud of. And so God anoints Saul. And when in 9:17, he tells Samuel, this is the guy. This is the one who's going to be the king of the people of Israel. But then when you go to 10:23 and 24, he said, so they ran and they brought him there. And when he stood among the people, he was taller than the other people by shoulders upward. And Samuel said to the people, do you see him whom the Lord has chosen? There is no one like him among the people. And the people said, long live the king. So he was everything they wanted. He was TDH. He was tall, dark, and handsome. He was physically appealing, but he was also, to me, he represented Israel turning away from God. And it worked for a while. But if you go down to the next couple of verses, God has to take the kingdom away from him. because he doesn't follow God's commandments. So God takes the kingdom away from him, and he tells him, I would have had your house be the ruler over my kingdom forever, but now I'm going to take it away from you. And we're introduced to David because he said, the Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart. So now we're introduced to David right there in that sentence, because he's telling us who he's going after. Now, so Samuel is told to go to the house of Jesse and find the next king. And Samuel, you know, says to God, God, if I go and Saul knows that I'm going, he's going to kill me. And like a good soldier, you know, he says, go. And he goes. Right? And so when he first gets there, the first son that Samuel sees is a lot like Saul. He's physically pleasing. And so Samuel, even being a judge and a prophet, thinks, okay, this is the guy. This is the guy that's going to be the next king. So there's a little glare there, but it says, so when they came and they looked at, I'm going to say Eliab, they said, surely this is the Lord's anointed. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or his physical stature, because I have refused him. It's almost like the Lord saying, we already went through this once. Don't look at his physical, the way he looks from the outside. For the Lord does not see as a man sees. For a man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And so Jesse called all his sons, and all his sons went in front of him. And Samuel's like, I haven't seen the one that God wants me to call to be the next king. Is there anybody else? And so Jesse says, well, there is one more, but he's my youngest, and he's out watching the sheep. Kind of like a correlation, like he's a great shepherd. Jesus, as we know, is the great shepherd, but knowing that King David is a great shepherd as well, because what he was willing to do for his flock. And so after all the sons went through, it says, so he sent and he brought him, and now he was ruddy, bright eyes, good looking, and the Lord said, arise and anoint him, for he is the one. So Samuel went ahead and anointed him in front of all his brothers, and he was going to be the next king of Israel. All right, so now we're kind of getting introduced to the physical battle that really didn't mean, I don't think it really meant a whole lot to David. But we're introduced to Goliath, and, you know, Goliath represents a lot of things, but Goliath is a big physical challenge in front of the Israelites. And, of course, one of the funny movies from the 80s that my daughter loved, The Three Amigos, it was the El Guapo. And El Guapo was kind of like Goliath. He was just their nemesis until they realized that they could defeat El Guapo. But if you look at what's going on here, I'm going to read a little bit of this as well. So the champion went out from the camp of the Philistines. His name was Goliath of Gath. And they talk about how tall he was. He was 6 cubits in span. And he had a bronze helmet. And he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of his coat was 5,000 shekels. Now, I don't know what a shekel weighs, but if it was even half an ounce, 5,000 of those has got to add up to a pretty good amount. So this was a very large person. In fact, if you were to look at what we would call the tell of the tape, back when I was a boxing fan back in the day, and I like to go back to young people, that's back when people used to actually fight, before it became almost like WWE wrestling. They would have what was the tell of the tape, and they would have all the measurables of the boxers. And they would have, like, their chest, they would have their reach, they would have their forearms, they would even measure their thighs, and then they would have their record. And so if you had that, and you had that David Griffith Goliath, of course they wouldn't even be in the same weight class. And all the physical attributes would say, look, Goliath is going to win this battle. There's no way that David's going to win this battle. But part of the story was always also their record. You know, who have they fought? And we know that Goliath was a champion. We don't know exactly who he fought, and he was probably getting to the point where he probably wasn't having to fight a lot. But we also know that David had already fought a bear. He already fought a lion. He had killed them both. So this was not something that he was afraid of. And I don't know what a bear and a lion look like in Israel. But even if it's a small black bear like we have here, I think that's a heck of a fight. Or even if it's a bobcat, I think that's a heck of a fight. So he was a ferocious fighter. But the one thing that Goliath said that was true when he was talking to Israelites, he said, "You are the servants of Saul." He said, because basically he was saying he knew that their faith wasn't in God. They had already turned to Saul. He said, "You are the servants of Saul." Next slide. But David, being the young man he was, his dad had sent him to meet his brothers and to bring some supplies to his brothers. And he just happened to get there as Goliath was coming back out, but he was on his way. And so David rose early in the morning, and he left his sheep with the keeper, and he took the things, and he went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp, and the army was going out to fight. Basically, they were mustering. They were coming together. Next slide. Right? And then as he was coming up, Goliath is out there. And if you see in 17:23, Goliath is running the same smack that he was talking earlier. Basically, is what it says. He said, "The Philistines spoke according to the same words." So David heard him this time. And David heard him talking all this junk of how he's going to kill the Israelites and how they're cowards and all this stuff. And this really got to David. Just couldn't. And when I read the Bible, it's like David doesn't understand what the heck's going on. You know, so David spoke to the man that stood by him, and he said, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away this reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the army of the living God?" So David's faith wasn't in the army of Saul. David's faith was in the army of God. And David was like, you know, this guy is out here making a fool of himself, but he's also making a fool of us. But more importantly, he's just an idiot out there walking around, and somebody needs to put him in his place. So David says to Saul, he said, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight the Philistine." Next slide, please. Now, David has to convince Saul, because Saul, you know, even though he wasn't anointed by God to be the king, his faith was still in the arm of man. And he says, "Look, you can't fight him. You're just a boy, and this guy has been a warrior since he was a boy." But David reminded him and told him about, you know, how he watched. He tells him, "Look, I'm a shepherd, but I'm a good shepherd. I'm not going to let my flock be harmed." So he was talking to him about how, you know, he had to fight a lion and how he had to fight a bear. And then he says, but he killed them both. It was no big deal, you know. And he said, just like that. He said, "Moreover, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." So he had convinced Saul, and Saul said, go ahead and go. Go ahead and fight the battle. Now, here's the part. Like I said, Goliath was the biggest stooge that was ever set up. Goliath never had a chance. Goliath was going to die that day. He didn't know, but when the sun came up, that was his last day. But the only chance that Goliath had is if David would have put on that armor. If David would have put his faith in man and not in God, that was the only chance that Goliath had. But the funny thing about it is, when Saul wanted David to put on his armor, even the idea, you know, the Bible tells us that Saul was a tall man. David was a short man. Even the armor would not even have fit him very well at the time. But more importantly, it was the idea that it had not been tested. As when David says, I cannot walk in these, for I have not tested them. And I think what David was saying, I've tested God. I know who God is. I've tested my faith in God, but I have not tested these. So I just can't take them. And then the funny part is, if you look at the last verse, it says that he took his staff in his hand, he chose to and fell 5 smooth stones from the brook. Now, he only used one. He took 5. And I thought about what Rhonda said a couple weeks ago about the 5 women that were in the line of Jesus. Now, I don't know if there's any correlation or not, but, and maybe Paul or somebody else in the church might know what those 5 stones represent, but he picked up 5, and I immediately thought of that, okay? And then he put them in his bag, and then he took his sling, and he went forward. All right, so now, here's the part where David could have backed off a little bit, or maybe in the natural, you know, we're battling something, you know, a physical battle. You know, praise God, my brother's coming through with his battle, but that battle could have been boisterous like this and saying, hey, look, this is what I do to people. You know, but the Philistine was basically saying that to David, and when he saw him, he didn't like him. He was almost offended. So when the Philistine looked and he saw David, he said he was only a youth, and he was ruddy and good-looking. So he kind of reminded me of, you ever see those kids from South Alabama, the boys with the Abercrombie shirts and the khaki shorts and the boat shoes? And maybe he had that look, and Goliath didn't like it. And you know, Goliath was a little offended, but then he started to tell David, I got to kill you, I guess, right? So he says, look, you come to me, I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. But then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with the sword and the spear and the javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord, the host of the army of Israel, who you defiled. Now, David didn't stop there. David said, I'm gonna keep it real. I'm going to keep it 100, all right? He said, this is what I'm going to tell you. He said, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head. But not only am I going to kill you, your whole army is going to be fed to the beasts of the field today. And I think at this point, Goliath was probably getting a little annoyed, but also thinking, okay, maybe there's a little more here than what I thought. You know, maybe this guy's, you know, so he's like, okay, let's go ahead and get this over with, because this guy's really starting to get on my nerves, and maybe he's getting a little bit worried, right? So what happens when the Philistine arose and came near? What did David do? He ran to the battle. He didn't hesitate. He ran to the battle. He took that one stone, and he slung it. And I can only imagine, you know, Goliath just thinking, what's this little guy doing? And then this little thing gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and boom, it's in his head. And he's on the ground. And it's, like I said, I think to David, again, that was nothing. David's like, look, this is just a physical battle. This is a guy who has defiled, not me, but he's come against the army of God. He's come against my faith. He's come against everything I believe in. And it's just not going to stand. And I think that's what the Bible tells us, why David was a man after God's own heart. He was not a perfect man by any standards. In fact, I've done some bad things in my life, but I don't think I've done some of the things that David's done. Now, I've never been a king, but, David, not exactly the guy you would think if God went out there and said, hey, I'm going to pick a man, but God picks who he wants to pick. And if we're willing to submit to him, he will use us. And no matter how imperfect we are, if we realize where we are in that book of Samuel, in that book of 2 Samuel, then we realize that God can use us no matter how. No matter if you have multilexia, like I do, God can still use you. So David was chosen by God because he was a man after his own heart. And like the earlier, we found out that God took the kingdom away from Saul because Saul didn't follow, you know, everything that God wanted him to do. And then where he says, but I sought him, a man after my own heart, and the Lord made him the new commander. Now, like I said earlier, David was not the best example of moral purity. You could look Enoch, Daniel, Joseph. They were all better examples. They were all people that basically ended up going through a lot and being convicted of a lot for, well, certainly Joseph and Daniel for nothing. They didn't. They were wrongly convicted. But again, God chose David, and David was willing to bow to the will of God, and that's what made him a man after God's own heart. But even with that, there's things that come to us when we step outside his will. You know that David was always at war, and the Bible tells us that he had 8 or 9 major battles. In fact, David was even at war with his own son, you know. So, yeah, he was a man after God's own heart, but he did have to carry the burden of the things that he brought on himself. And as Rhonda said last week, he even took Uriah's wife. And Uriah was probably one of the best military men he had. He was a good soldier, a great leader. He wouldn't even go stay inside his house because his men were in the field. But David said, I want what you have. And David couldn't just take his wife because that wouldn't be right. But David could say, hey, look, make sure he's in the heat of the battle until he doesn't come home. And that's what happened. But also, David wasn't allowed to build the temple. And I think that David longed to build the temple, but God told him, you're not going to build the temple. I'll let your son do it. These are one of the slides where Dalton did everything I asked him to do. But then you look at him later and go, oh, okay, was this like earlier? But, you know, next slide, please. So, you know, in closing, and Dalton did a great job. He really did. But I tend to put a little bit too much scripture in it maybe sometimes. But by knowing this story, that we know that when we turn to God and we put our faith in man, we're capable of doing, when we turn away from God, we're capable of doing horrific things. And we think about things like rebellion is like the sin of witchcraft. That's what the Bible tells us. And we think of, you know, people who rebel throughout time and what terrible things happened to them. And you're like, well, it didn't seem like they did something really terrible, but it was the fact that they were in rebellion that took them away from the grace of God and took them out of that protection. And you think about a whole nation like Nazi Germany, you know, falling under the idea that there was a perfect race, or like Rwanda, where basically they killed each other because there was a tall tribe and a short tribe. Complete genocide. But when we submit to God, we're also capable of doing amazing things. And going back to the first part, thinking about when we're outside the will of God, we're just selfish people, man. People are selfish. I'm selfish. I'm here to tell you, I'm sorry, but you're selfish. When you get up till you go to bed, I'm here to tell 80% of what you think about is what you need. I need to eat. I need to take a bath. It's hot in here. It's cold in here. I got to stop here. And then it goes to your, you know, your kids or whatever. I need to take care of my family and all this other stuff. Outside of Christ, if it comes down to me or you or the next person, you're going to fight for what you need. That's just the way we're wired. But inside of Christ, we're, you know, I think of Mother Teresa, and not to get Catholic on you guys, but I'm thinking of Mother Teresa and devoting her whole life to the poor. And these poor in this country were always, they're in a caste system. They're always going to be poor. They're not moving up. There's nothing she can do for them. It can't be a, you know, we don't need a hand, we just need a hand up. There's no hand up. You're going to stay where you are. But she devotes her whole life, and her whole earthly possession are 2 uniforms. I know guys who have 14 pairs of shoes. And you think, well, who are you, Miss Marcos, the lady from the Philippines who had 1,000 pairs of shoes or whatever? Yeah, for younger people, she was like the prime minister of the Philippines. She had thousands of pairs of shoes while her nation was, bankrupt or whatever. But I see guys like that, and I'm like, who are you? Are you from the Philippines or something? Why do you got 14 pairs of shoes? Or Corrie Ten Boom. And if you don't know her story, get to know it. And if you ever can find that old movie, I promise you, you'll be scared to death of The Hiding Place. But the amazing thing about her that I didn't know from watching the movie is she started a ministry after her entire family. I knew her entire family died. Her mom, her dad, her sisters, her brothers. She was the only one that made it. She started a ministry not for the Jews that survived, but for the fellow citizens who turned them in. I have a hard time forgiving someone who raises a voice at me, you know? And she's sitting there opening a ministry for the people that turned her family in because they needed healing, because they knew, you know, the horrific stuff that happened. So just in closing, 1 Samuel really came to my mind the last couple of weeks because I really felt like I needed to understand, was I turning towards God or was I turning to myself? And again, if you turn to yourself, you're turning to man. However you want to say it. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. And I'm going to turn it back over to Paul.